Good evening and welcome to Fighting Crime. We are live on Hot 95.3 FM and VOB 92.9 FM. This is the program where we discuss solutions to crime and violence. I am your host, Scott LaRock Headley. Our producer this evening, as usual, is Mr. Dennis Johnson. As part of the Fighting Crime conversation last week, we featured Professor Dwayne Devenish of the University of the West Indies and criminologist Kim Ramsey throughout the series, and this evening you will hear the voices of certain individuals who have volunteered to share their personal experiences from the perspective of knowing what goes on in the world of crime and violence. Last week's guest on Fighting Crime, well, a few weeks ago, Shamar Bernard, who spoke about his reintegration into society following a prison sentence and wanting to further contribute to the discussion, took to the streets for some of these views. Our inclusion of these voices is not intended to glorify a lifestyle or acts of crime and violence. Rather, within the broader context of the topic at hand, Fighting Crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence, we hope that hearing varying perspectives will further assist in understanding the issues and discussing meaningful solutions. The content in such instances may be inappropriate for children, and parental guidance is advised.
This is Shamar Bernard of the panel with a discussion about fighting crime and crime violence in Barbados, the heightened gun crime and stuff like that in Barbados. I'm here with a young man, a young entrepreneur. So I'll be interviewing him and asking him about what kind of upbringing did you had as a young man?
Wasn't the best growing up, wasn't the worst, but I managed to survive and get through all of it, you know? Everything worked out. Wasn't bad, man.
So what will you say motivate you to choose a life otherwise than crime, to come out here instead of being with a firearm or what's not, to opening up your own little business and, you know, selling your vegetables and stuff like that?
Raise it in one environment, right? Say enough violence, you know? Tell myself it won't be different, won't make a change. So that's where the basic idea come from. That's where the plan come from, to like do my own thing, get out there, keep myself occupied for around these kind of things.
So you would say in any way the gun violence is affect you or anything like that?
I won't say so per se, but I know it affected other people across the nation and things, so. Yeah, bother people, but real truth, me personally, I never was affected by it or anything. Just per se, like that.
So, as a young man, with your peers, you have never been pressured or at some time motivated to use a firearm or anything like that to go into a life of crime?
Yeah, a couple of things, but I was strong enough to make my own decisions, and it wasn't nothing I was interested in, so I do my own thing.
So if you had to give your opinion on a way to bring down the crime level in Barbados, the gun crime and stuff like that, all crime, bring a solution to the problem, what would be your solution?
Find more employment for people, find things that occupy people. Don't just bash them out and create them out, find things for them to do. Once you occupy them and they get money, I think they can work. Everything is be smooth and you're broke. People want to kill. Violence can rise and the money stirring. People, children hungry. Violence can rise.
So
they gotta solve their problems before anything else.
So you would say that poverty is one of the motivating factors, one of the strong motivating factors behind crime?
Yeah, that's the main thing. Poverty. If everybody had money, everybody living good, nobody won't be studying things and studying. I mean, if you don't, a man going to attack you, you got a gun, rope.
Okay.
I would say it's poverty.
Okay. But it's good to know that you attack it, you're going to win a rope. You start your own little business.
That's true.
It's a striving business. It's doing quite well as a young man.
That's true.
I have been passing and observing and see that you have a wide range of customers. How do your customers accept you and you accept your customers?
Me and my customer chair born. If you understand each other, they understand me. Then as business and years went long, they get to understand me more and it just developed from there. I can't say much about it.
As you say years, how long you been doing this?
I'm about 25 now. I've been doing it for about 17.
Wow.
17.
At this point, I would like to thank you for allowing me to interview, and I hope that you will continue to get blessings upon your business and upon you, and you will continue to keep away from the crime and the violence that is going on in our country, Barbados.
Respect, brother.
You were listening to an interview with one of our previous panelists, Shamar Bernard, who took to the streets and spoke to certain individuals who have volunteered to share their personal experiences from the perspective of knowing what goes on in the world of crime and violence. We want to emphasize that the inclusion of these voices is not intended to glorify a lifestyle or acts of crime and violence. Rather, within the broader context of the topic at hand, fighting crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence, we hope that hearing varying perspectives will further assist in understanding the issues and discussing meaningful solutions. We are on episode 4 of this 6-part series. My co-host this evening is Mr. Imran Richards, and he has a packed panel. Some very interesting folk as well. We have Dr. Keo Ford St. Hill, psychiatrist. She currently is a senior registrar at the psychiatric hospital assigned to the Child Guidance Clinic. She has a passion for mental health promotion. We also have Mr. John Roberts, community representative, Crime Stoppers. John is a young man who is passionate about challenging persons on subjects of purpose and decision making. He has served at various institutions, including Her Majesty's Prison Dodds and Teen Challenge Barbados. He also facilitates sessions with Crime Stoppers Barbados in the primary and secondary schools. And we also have Mr. Rashid Belgrave, attorney at law. Imran, it's been a while. What's up?
Man, what's going on? I'm good. I just have one real quick question, Scott, before we really get into this. John, when you say you've served at Her Majesty's prison, do you mean that you've served time? Like, can you quantify that? No, I'm just kidding. It's okay, bro. It's great to have you on the call. I'm really excited. Scott, the last couple of episodes that I've been listening to have been really informative and encouraging to hear. I feel like as the series continued, like there were some recurring themes related to the contribution to crime and violence. I feel like poverty was one that kept coming up a lot, and we heard it again tonight. Families and the influence or lack thereof related to families, broken homes, fatherlessness, and so forth. We also heard a lot about communities or community influence or the environment and the role that that plays. And youth unemployment continues to be one of those things which connects to the idea of poverty. So there are a few things that were mentioned, and inclusive in all of those are areas of societal responsibility. But I wonder, where is personal responsibility in all of this? We talked a lot about those external influences, but what about those intrinsic influences? And certainly those things contribute significantly to decision making, but at the end of the day, we are not just products of our circumstances, we are products of our choices. And so tonight, I would love to hear, especially given that we have the psychologist, we have an individual who works directly with children and youth in the prison system, the school system. And we have Rashid, who I'm sure interacts with individuals who may find themselves given to those types of behaviors and so forth. What do you guys think informs these choices and decisions, and where does personal responsibility come in, and how do we begin to help young people to make better choices going forward? So I don't know, Scott, but like those are where my thoughts are at. I don't know what about you, bro.
Yeah, that's an interesting path to go down. I was going to say that you seem to have chosen violence today, but I don't think it would be appropriate, so let's go.
Okay, awesome. So, the floor is open, guys. We heard a lot about those external circumstances, but what about the power of choice? And what is the role of that in all of this? Are we taking too much of the responsibility off of these young people and therefore giving them an opportunity, to blame every and anything else? What is your take?
Well, Ellen, we can go. Good night to everyone. Thanks for having me here. In terms of what I see in the schools, I'd have to say that it really is twofold. I don't think we can neglect the importance of society And also we need to recognize as well how important choice is. Well, I would start off by just asking you, Imran, or anyone else out there, to probably try to do something that, you know, do something like probably rotate your hands in opposite directions or something like that. You know, you might have the instruction, you might want to do the thing, but because you don't have the muscle memory, it would be really hard for you to do. I think what happens is that the things that we see over and over, those things inform our choice. But I was listening to the guy that we heard earlier, now, and he said something really important. He spoke about basically he made a decision that he wasn't going to go down this road, you know, and he had a dream to be different and to do better. And I think that's a very, very important thing. I think a lot of times we focus a lot on the negative, you know, and trying to move persons or challenge persons where they're at. But I think a lot of times, like, some problems can be solved as well in terms of just pointing persons in a different direction, connecting them to purpose, connecting them to dreams, helping them to get where their talents could lead them. I think that is really important as well. So to wrap up, I think personal choice, decision-making, understanding that you do have the ability to chart a course of your life is very important.
Okay, cool. Dr. Keo Ford, St. Hill, what do you think, you know, following on from what John would have mentioned, do you think there is a separation of choice and circumstances? Do you see the two as something that go together in terms of informing behavior? What are your thoughts?
So in psychiatry, we look at disorders with a multifactorial model generally. So for me, there's no real separation. All of them are contributing factors to somebody's behavior today. So while, yes, there may be a family history of aggression and violent behavior, and there are persons who have what we call antisocial personality disorder, which is very common amongst the prison population, and not antisocial, and what we usually use the word as not somebody who wants to hang out with people and keeps to themselves, but antisocial actually meaning that they're against all rules and norms and everything. They will break every single rule. And that is how they actually end up usually in the prison system. And the thing about that is that while it may be diagnosed as an adult, usually we see from children, these children are usually diagnosed with conduct disorder. So the bad boy at school that uses weapons, is threatening people, getting into fights, stealing, cruel to animals, getting suspended all the time, not performing well in school, all those things. If we don't try to curb those behaviors from then, well, then we end up with antisocial person later. Okay. Adult, I should say.
Yeah, I get you. I think, okay, so Rashid, let me hear from you then, you know, your thoughts on this.
Hi, good night. Good night to everyone, and thank you for having me on the show tonight. Just following on from the contributions from John and Ms. Kido, hope I pronounce it correctly. I have to agree that you can't separate the external issues and choice. I agree that there are contributing factors and they cannot be easily separated, meaning that one person may say my demographics or my socioeconomic situation caused me to join a gang or shoot a gun or et cetera, or I may say the influences caused me to do this. It all comes down to one melting pot. For example, we know there are blocks, we know there are some blocks where there's violence, and we know there are some blocks where men just go out and have a beer and play dominoes, cuss one another, but the energy doesn't go to a level of violence, right? So it all comes down to choice.
Yeah.
Personal choice. Now, you may find a situation where because sometimes you may think you don't have a choice, but your actions may speak differently. And what you say, so as a practicing attorney at law, you may hear somebody say, well, man, man. I don't know what happened. The man told me, just give me a gun and then shoot me, man. But when you start to get some more details, or you use a line playing block, you associate with such and such. So you actually ensure that you are already engaging in certain conduct that will lead to a certain result. So I really, and the point raised about school as well, remember, schoolboys getting charged for chopping up people or stabbings on buses or whatever. Remember when the child in the police station, the first thing the mother or the father will say, well, I didn't know he or she carried school this, right? So that's why I say we always cannot to personal choice, because you will be around these influences, and don't get me wrong, the youngest child sometimes would know the consequences of their actions. They will behave a certain way and stop behaving because they know they'll get licks, and that's a child. So if you're dealing with an adolescent, a teenager, or a youth, you know, when you carry school, you knife or you flick knife or whatever, or you just so happen to find yourself in possession of a firearm, you know, you're going to school, you're showing it open, you're in the bathroom, you're in the classroom, and the teacher going to say, you're passing about the bag, your actions already speak to a certain result. So something, it may sound a little harsh, right? But you have to be harsh with persons who are willing to make harsh decisions, because pulling the trigger easier than using a knife, right? Mentality wise, and obviously I could speak on this, well, psychiatrists can speak on it as well, but speaking on it from my perspective as a attorney at law, you may find situations where a person, I don't even want to gross out anybody, but stabbing a person, pushing an object into a person and tearing flesh, a little more difficult on the mind to process afterwards than just taking out something pop pop from far, because after you pop pop, majority of the time the person may run. You don't know if the person get hit, because sometimes you may find a situation where a person said the police, well, man, I fired a gun, but I ain't know he dead. Right? So it is a level of responsibility that each person has to take, because yeah. 9 or 10 times the family defines. Remember when you read the paper and you see somebody charged and you read the paper, you know the first person will say, oh well, I know my so-and-so son does do that, he don't move like that kind of person. He speak to me every morning, I can't believe he will do such a thing, you know, he's so vicious. Right, so it all comes down to personal choice, because
it has to come down to personal choice, because at the end of the, I mean, obviously there are varying levels of responsibility. There's family responsibility, there is societal responsibility, the church has a responsibility, you know, media stations, and we were called out in the first episode, they have a responsibility. But then there's that personal responsibility that you can't get away from. And like you mentioned, the family isn't facing the consequences of their choices, you know, with you. They may face maybe of another type of consequence of having to deal with you, but you're the person who's going to prison. You're the person who's going to be getting charged, et cetera, you, as the individual who took the action. So my question is, why is it that one person who grows up in a specific environment would take a completely different course of action, make a completely different set of decisions, go on to go to school and do well and stay out of trouble. Maybe they say to themselves, like the guy who was selling the vegetables that was interviewed earlier, look, me, I tell myself early, I didn't want that life. I staying away from that life. Grew up in the same community, maybe come from a similar family, similar environment, but they made entirely different choices. What is the difference between that type of individual and the person who finds themselves becoming a casualty of the culture?
I think it ultimately comes down to mentality, right? Because you may have a situation where I know you're trying to dissect one category in that, probably just to be real, they grew up in the ghetto. You know, they grew up in the ghetto around the block, or may live next to the block. They may come from an area where, you know, compare town to St. Philip or town to St. Thomas, right? Town will obviously will be more prevalent with crime, et cetera, et cetera. So you would expect a person growing up in town, so to speak. Just an example, nothing against persons who grew up in the town area.
Not stereotyping, yeah.
Right. My dad's my disclaimer, right? Right. So you may have a person grow up in town, so to speak, and a person grew up in the country, and you would obviously expect the town person, because they grew up around more things that more criminality, so to speak. You would expect their persona to be more aggressive, more violent, more willing to use guns and what's not. But it all comes down to mentality, because that same person from the same area, right, could have the ambitions of going to UE or going to BCC, and to turn the issue upside down. You may have somebody who come from a upscale family, living in a three-bedroom house, bathroom, inside toilet, but they not learn playing block, telling them, man, my life are you, enjoy you, my mother even cutting the food. That you say that to a man who probably ain't got a mother or father, living with a grandmother, granny foot, probably got diabetes, she can't really cook. So this man will probably get a little labor work, the money ain't lasting long, but this man, we got $50 in his pocket, but he telling me, this man that then get up, when he go house, really roof on, the doors is locked, he got hot water, all he got is take a plate, eat some food, he ain't gonna wash the dishes. And he said, man, life hard. So he can't know the mentality, because the person who obviously have the better life, thinking below par, and the person who doesn't have the greatest achievements or greatest life, taking to excel a bit. So it all comes down to how you process the situation, because every man on the block may not be willing to fire again. Furthermore, the man on the block more frightened than the 8 years you're willing to get as a first timer for gun possession than somebody else who willing to say, man, I will fire anytime, any morning, noon, or night, I will do this, I'll do that. That thing, when it comes down, when it's time to put your foot to the fire, the first man to take off, you see, and the person that was listening to this man all the time, I can do this thing, find yourself in trouble. So it all comes down to how you process. I know there are a lot of influences, like I said, it all comes down to money, poverty, you said the church, you said the radio stations, but honestly, in my opinion, I just listen to Cartel, I listen to Alkaline, I listen to Mavado, I listen to Popcorn. I never do half the things that they put in the songs, right? I watch Netflix, I watch The Heist.
What half did you do then? You didn't do half of the things you put in the songs. No, that's why I just go to John or Keo Ford. Do you guys have anything for us on this?
Before we go there, Imran, let me just let everybody know, if you want to jump in the conversation at any time, you can do so at 266-4862. That's via WhatsApp, or you can give us a call at 434-1790. Remember Buju had that song, Circumstances Made Me Who I Am, Was I Born a Violent Man? It's a very interesting tune when you think about it, you know. Anyway, let's continue.
Don?
Yes, please. I think this is a really hard question to answer. I was just thinking back to persons I would have spoken with and here and there, like stories in terms of what changed them, what caused them to change. And as I was thinking back through some of these things, I was just thinking about the word influence, you know. I was just thinking about one guy, and for him, although his background was fairly negative, you know, there was a positive influence on his life, a mentor, you know, who had walked with him and encouraged him, you know. So although he came from a certain background, he ended up making a lot of his life because of this positive influence who was there. And that's just what was coming to me. But I think there's just so many different circumstances. There's just so many different things that can happen. That's in that sense, that's a really hard question to answer.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with John. There's no one answer. There's no one reason for why people do what they do when it comes to committing acts of violence. And what the attorney Rashid was saying as well, you see persons from all walks, different walks of life, who came up differently, and it's their perspective on how their life was helped to make the decisions that they make. I like to use myself as an example and those around me without calling their names, but I grew up in a country, so I grew up in St. Andrew, right? I would say honestly that the community I grew up in was quite, I find now that I'm adult, I realize it was actually, I was very sheltered in my little country life. And I went to school in a suburban area, let's call it that, right? Now, this school had both, you know, the children from suburbia and children from what would be considered ghetto areas.
Yeah.
And even within the ghetto areas, some of those students that I went to school with had families who were, yes, so them and the other fella live right next door to each other. Them is walk the same road to get to the school and everything. But like one is in jail now. The other one works at UE. The other one and is a doting husband and father and everything. And when I look at those people, I look at, as far as you said, they had, if they didn't have necessarily a strong father, they had a father figure, or they had a strong mother who ensured, who had strict rules and structure and boundaries and everything in place. And people may have laughed at them and teased them when they were in school, but look where they are now in comparison to the other person who lived in the same neighborhood as them, that parents just let them do as they please.
So you think too much freedom is a contributing factor?
Oh, definitely. I tell parents this from the beginning when they bring children to child guidance clinic. You need to have boundaries, rules, and structure. That's how children thrive. If you do not do that, it is chaos, pure chaos. So something as simple as having a bedtime, the child might not necessarily go to sleep, but they have to understand that there's a cutoff time for all this activity and fun and frolicking, and you need to go into your bed, and a time to get up, and there's a time to get ready for school, and you have to do X amount of work when you come home, and you can get the freedom to be on your tablet and all that. If you do not do that from then, how you expect when they turn 16 to try and tell them you need to get home by 8 o'clock?
Is such a circular conversation, Scott, because we're coming all the way back to some of these same issues again that we highlighted. I want to ask, so let's look at it from the perspective of parenting, and I'm going to move the conversation eventually from these specifics to more looking at the profiles of youth and what is necessary for their positive development. What do you guys think is necessary to empower a young person to really make good choices, to ensure that they are given a fighting chance to steer clear of violence and go on to be productive citizens? And in light of that, let's say the parent really takes their role seriously. Is there an age that is too early to tell? Are there signs, are you able to pick up, you know, that a three-year-old is difficult, in inverted commas, and therefore could potentially be problematic going forward? Like, how does a parent, because I remember Rashid was talking about the fact that the attorney was talking about the fact that, you know, there are some cases where the parent may come into the station and not even be aware that their son was living a particular lifestyle. You know, they were all along being completely deceived and they weren't able to pick up on signs. So how early is too early? When should you start looking for stuff? Like, and any response to that?
You need to be looking from the beginning. So from the beginning. So yes, a three-year-old can be difficult. I, however, do not necessarily advocate that they come to see me. But we do have four-year-olds that parents and a lot of the times they're guardians and not necessarily parents, grandparents and stuff that bring them to see us because of their behavior. So yes, from then you realize there's this child that talking back, rude, and we still do carpool.
I mean, yes. That was 3 years was an extreme example.
Yes. Yes. And we still do carpool punishment. So they're beating them, ain't making a difference. They're just looking at you like, what you hitting me for? And still they not doing the same behaviors. That 4 years old and getting reception at infancy and getting suspended from school for being violent and that sort of thing. But I will be honest with you, when you look because in psychiatry, the history that we take from all persons involved, because it's probably, say, up to today, a relative asks me, these appointments is usually taxed along? Yes, because I want to know everything from when the mother was pregnant coming back down, because a lot of things play into this. So yes, three is not, is you need to be looking from early. I remember my mother told me just about 2 weeks ago, from the time her child was in primary school, she knew that something was wrong. And she tried to get help for her child from then because she noticed behaviors that were very concerning to her.
I think our guest last week mentioned that her daughter was put out of 2 nurseries by the time she was 3 or 4. I can't remember exactly, but...
That happens. Yes. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It happens.
So, that is, wow. So, John, you work a lot in schools and you've done some work in the prison system. As a matter of fact, you and I have had the privilege of working together on projects with Crime Stoppers Barbados. What would you say in your experience has been really helpful as you guys try to tackle this issue of anger and violent behavior that is displayed by specific young people? I would love for you to make a reference at some point to a few of the feuds that you and your team would have been able to quash after being invited to schools when fights went viral on social media and so forth after the fact.
Very cool. Let me start by just mentioning the word relationship. I think that's really important. What we found is that children oftentimes don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So what we would do oftentimes is that we would seek to build relationships, you know, to be able to connect with them, you know, to be able to find common ground, help them to recognize that we have an understanding as to where they're at, right? So that gives our words a better platform to land on. What we would have seen a lot of tremendous stuff as it relates to being able to challenge these children concerning their behavior and their thought patterns. A few things. One, I would say, is something I recognize is that children are actually well aware of right and wrong. You know, a lot of these children actually know what to do, but oftentimes they are influenced more by their peers, you know. So it's more about moving the conversation away from just information, but getting to understand what really affects their decision-making. As it relates to being able to, or working with fuels and fights, I think it's really important to understand the foundation and the reason behind it, you know? It might seem one way on the onset, you know, like persons might think, man, they're fighting over this, they're fighting over that. But when you really get down to it, you recognize oftentimes there are a lot more simple things, you know. And oftentimes we recognize that a lot of fights start simply from words. You know, someone said something and someone felt disrespected. And because of their inability to deal with conflict, then it keeps escalating. Unfortunately, we live in this. A lot of these children, the examples that they see are such that encourage them, or at least when they practice these examples, they tend to escalate conflicts and just create worse situations instead of de-escalation. And we would have had, we would have seen great success and had seen some situations where we were able to bring opposing sides, even opposing gangs together. I probably never forget, I have a picture on my phone of 2 opposing gangs and they're holding each other and they're praying for each other, you know? So there are methods in which
we can deal with. These are gangs in school?
Yep. We do have gangs in school and we do have gangs on the internet as well. A lot of people, a lot of these children are being initiated via the internet, via social media. This is a real thing that's happening.
Every time I hear the word gang, my mind flashes back to when I was working technical for Bastax years ago. And I remember we had a Sunday program where we were talking about gangs. And there was somebody on and he said, there are no gangs in Barbados. I would never forget that. It always rings in my head every time I hear the word gang.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah, there are no gangs in Barbados, just like how there's not a river in Egypt called the Nile.
Remember, you can jump in on the conversation at any time. 266-4862, that's the WhatsApp number, or you can give us a call at 434-1790. You can also hit us up on the hot WhatsApp, 266-4688. Someone is saying, as adults, we can't do all these things we want children to do, but expect them to be different. We need more inner engineering centers where not only children, but adults can go to get help to know themselves before they can influence another's life. What do y'all think about that?
Well, you see, in my line of work, I can only speak from my experience. John may have a different experience. Dr. Kato may have a different experience, but in my experience, I mean, a parent can only do so much, right? A family member can only do so much. Even if you don't necessarily teach children the wrong things, you know. Children learn these things from your behavior and the different personalities you may show them and the different emotions. Remember, sometimes you may come home from a long day, the fridge open, right? It may not be you, but the first thing you kick off, oh, so-and-so, who left your fridge? No, you never teach your child to behave like that, but your child will keep picking up these little...
That's such a powerful comment, and I don't want to jump in and think, but like, and it reminds me of a point that was made, that children don't learn, especially at adolescents and teenage years, like, they aren't learning with their ears, they're learning with their eyes. So it's not just what you say to them, but it's what they actually see on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, continue.
Right, so it is your behavior and conduct sometimes. So even though you may be saying to them, because the old thing saying is don't do what I say, right?
Yeah.
Right. Don't do what I say. But basically, from watching a situation, you start to pick up certain things. You start to pick up certain behaviors. So even though you may be trying to hammer some good and positive ways of thinking and a methodology so to behave into each other, they're still not going through one ear coming through next. What's sticking in is the visual, right? So when you pass, you age a youth, you move from 5 to 10, 10 to 15, these things become accumulative and start to build on one another to the point where you may be telling each other, a fight may break out, something may happen. You hold each other, tell each other, don't go outside. Because you, as an adult, you, as an experienced person, you know that if you go outside, something will kick off and somebody may get hurt, somebody may email. But you know that from experience because basically life is a copy. We live these things over and over again. You don't really find new issues. It means a fight may start with somebody telling them about the mother or the father. A fight may start, somebody stepping on the toes. So really, it's a fight may start because you might tell somebody something and this person confront you. So it don't really be no issues, be things repeating itself all the time. So you're trying to tell somebody, do not go outside. I hold you because I know this thing can escalate more than you could see right now. And you're not thinking straight because you emotionally immature. But you're trying to listening, you're like, get outside, I gotta defend this and that. And then you can pull away from you're not heeding good advice, and then you gotta call me. Right? I skip all the variables that could happen in between, right? But what I'm saying is that you get to a point where you become uncontrollable. So I agree that parents may have a responsibility, society, but at the end of the day, sometimes it comes down to the individual. Even if the individual is young, he's still in a position to process certain things. And one thing I would like to raise is that the unfortunate situation at Frederick Smith where the youngster was stabbed to death. I don't know if you can remember that, but basically, from my understanding, persons were saying to the guy, well, if you don't get stopped, like piece of wood, you may fight with somebody hitting a piece of wood, you don't want to hit them more because you don't want to kill them. But because you're so emotionally immature, you pass a point where you pass a point to come back, meaning everybody trying to tell you no, but you won't prove that you can get this thing done, right? And apologize for using the young man situation, but I just give you a solid reference in that you got persons telling you if you may stop, meaning you could process that you hurting this person savagely, right? and people answer a few minutes, stop. So a more mature person, the psychiatrist could tell you, more mature person would already already foresee the amount of things that could happen. And in law, it's called that recklessness. So even if you don't commit the act with direct intention, meaning I deliberately went to hurt this person or stop this person, you will be reckless to the fact that this person could have get hurt if you use a knife and poke them multiple times. It could die, right?
Someone says, sorry, continue, Rashid. I didn't mean to cut you.
Yeah, no, I wrapping up. So basically, yes, we have a responsibility as parents, as influencers. There's
only so much parents could do.
Is only so much parents can do. Yes.
Yes. Someone says, good night. I'm enjoying the discussion. Yes, it comes down to personal choice, but if that's all you know, if you only know one way, well, there is no choice.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting comment, too.
That's such a poor.
I disagree, because if you watch the Matrix says you always have a choice.
This is your point of reference, bro. You got a problem.
A big one, Imran. Let me just read one more WhatsApp before we jump back into the discussion. Good night. It starts in the home, whereas a lot of households are divided. Also, poverty and peer pressure play a role. Many mothers have children, things hard, and some of the children turn to the blocks. The block men feed them, clothe them, make sure they are right. The older blockheads would feed you and educate you, send you home. But these ones of today turn you into runners. So it's like Tom was there for me. He feed me, he clothed me, etc. He tell me, shoot Jack, I will do it, as he was there for me. So I owe him. Then some do it saying they will be back out before they are old. You mean, I guess they're saying some people go commit a crime thinking, well, I can do this, get a few years at the road, and they're gonna be back home before they're old.
Yeah, and that's the issue, right, Scott? Because I think this is where I believe that a lot of young people are not thinking for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
John C. Maxwell says, look, the issue with popular thinking is that it doesn't require you to think at all, right? A lot of young people, like you just need to go with the flow.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question is, all of you can answer, but like Dr. Q, Ford, I'd love for you to take a jab at this one. Because I was reading some research and it highlighted the fact that most individuals don't live life based on what they believe. They live life based on where they belong or who they belong to. So for them, facts won't change their minds as much as a friendship will. A lot of individuals are more concerned with who their sense of belonging. And if in order to belong to a particular group, it means that they need to reject or suppress a particular belief system that is contrary to the group that they find themselves being a part of, then that is what they're willing to do. In my mind, I feel like there's like you can see 7 people walk down a road and fall into a well. You can see it clearly. I grew up in the ghetto. I mean, like 7 police jeeps would surround my house. 5 in the morning, you know, kick the door down, you know, guns drawn, my little cousins crying, etc. I knew what a life of crime would lead to. My uncle was beaten badly. My dad was addicted to cocaine, you know, tried to commit suicide on 2 occasions. I saw that. I had the experience. This was in my home, but then in my wider community, I saw what drugs did. But somehow, the friends that I ended up having still led me, I still found myself making decisions that were completely in alignment with what I already knew was wrong. You know, what do you say to a young person who may, as John mentioned, they know what is right, they know the right thing to do, but somehow this idea, this sense of belonging is such a critical component for them that they are willing to abandon truth or fact in favor of friendships?
Boy, that's a tough one. But it goes back to, let me reinforce the point that the listener on WhatsApp was making. Mm-hmm. I have encountered more than one, unfortunately, it's usually a young male, not female, most of the time, who either did not have the relationship. So that comes back in at home, and love at home, or shown the love in the way that they expect to be loved. Because we don't think about the children's love languages. We think about our own when it comes to our partners, but we think, okay, provide food or provide shelter. I do this, I do that. Of course, I love my child. They don't say I love you. They don't really get any praise, nothing like that, right? Also, some of them may have lost the only person who actually loved them in their family. They go on the block, that the community they grew up in, they're on the block. The gang leaders, just like the person said, clothe them, feed them, and they feel loyal and indebted to these people because they love me. They accept me for who I am. They do not quarrel with me. They provide for me. They sent me to school because they didn't draw them out to school. Mm-hmm. Sent them to school. So carrying on in the gang life and moving up in the organization was just a natural progression.
Wow.
So, and the converse, if you have somebody, if you have a friend that could show you a different way of life, friends, community members who are the roses among the thorns to show you a different way of life, hold your hand and guide you through a different way of life, you can make different decisions because somebody is showing you that this is different. Somebody is calling you out on your nonsense and saying, no, you know that this is not what you're supposed to do. You ain't going out there with them today. Come, we going and learn to fish.
Yeah.
Stuff that makes a huge difference.
Do you guys think that peer pressure is next level in these times? Like, you spoke about your friends, Imran, and you ended up making bad decisions, decisions that you knew would lead to certain consequences, and you still made them anyway because friends peer pressure. But nowadays, we got social media. People want to fit in even more because everybody want to be cool. You know what I mean? We got to be trending. So do you guys think that peer pressure is next level nowadays?
I don't know if I would say that is next level. I think peer pressure was always there. I think we have a different type of challenge in the time that we live in because of social media, especially. I want to actually go back to come forward, all right? Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something that a comment that Rashid had made concerning parenting, right? So I remember speaking to a peer, and the parent in their mind had done all that they can do for their child, and I suggested to them that maybe you have not done all you can do. If you had gone and you had educated yourself to learn a little bit more about parenting itself, then you could offer your child some more. So the parent was unaware of the different stages that children go through. So we understand that children go through what we call a mother impact stage, a father impact stage, and then the peer impact stage, right? And this is something that all children go through. So if they had the understanding, they have that knowledge, then they'll understand that this is a reason, like this is actually natural and normal that my child is responding this way. Instead of me just fighting against the natural thing, let me work with it. Let me have them join a club so that they can be around good peer pressure, good peer, you know, they can have good persons to work with them. Yeah. So I feel as if, like, yes, I understand where parents say, well, you know, I've done all I can do, but I don't agree with it per se. And not to say that you can possibly do that. I know there are situations where persons are honestly given 100 and it's not turned out that way. But I feel as if, like we think that we're given 100, but oftentimes we're given 50% simply because we have not upgraded ourselves in terms of with the tools or equipped ourselves with the tools to be able to help the children.
So it's not, you're right.
It's not that you haven't done all that you can do. You have done all that you can do.
But you don't know.
You don't. Yeah, it's all that you know to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you've done all that you know to do. You know.
Yes, because the same. When I tell you our history in psychiatry goes back to when you mothered the pregnant and everything. When then I said, well, the early separation of you and his dad when he was 2 years old and daddy getting upset and now wanting to jump back in now that he's 13 because you and daddy could not get along for that entire time. The little things sometimes that parents say, but you know, honestly, I didn't think that was a big issue. I didn't think that really would affect him. And when you speak to the child, because a lot of them don't speak to their children or with their children, they speak at them. When you actually ask the child's like, yeah, I just feel real stink. And I ain't had nobody to talk to.
I think, in my opinion, I think one of the critical things that should be done is basically categorizing the different personalities, because and agreeing with the host as well, with the guest, sorry, instead of painting everybody with one brush, there are some that you could save. Let me say they are ones who may live in a non-affluent neighborhood, but doing well in school. So if you put them on a thin line to walk on, is either fall over into, you know, the ghetto, the shooting, the stabbing, the selling the weed, etc., or you progress in school. So depending on the type of category dealing with, you could apply, like Hedo said, different methods or measures to help save them, right? Save is a strong word, but to help them progress or move from a certain environment, right? Because you will say that I am a product of my environment. So even though you may have somebody reaching for higher education, going to UE, you may still go home and studying for the exam and quit. So here a couple may run past, you need to stop, pop, 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 you know? So you may go hit the ground, and then when everything cool down, we get back and start studying again, because the person learned to adapt. So basically, depending on the category, you put measures in place to save them. So like from youth to adolescent. But the reason I say I put them in categories, there are some that you just cannot work with. There are some that even mom may be telling you, don't do X, and the cursing mama tell mama, you can't tell me this, X, Y, Z, etc., etc. So if you're not willing to listen to good advice, being real, you gotta let them drown. Meaning, you gotta let them suffer the consequences of probably going to jail, getting caught up in the system, so that when they probably remand or come home, they're thinking differently. The mentality is, I don't want to go back to jail because jail hard. Not saying that that is the situation for everybody, but what I'm saying is to put them in categories, because there's some that you can't save. There's some that are even so bad that once you give them a little positive light in the life, a mentor or somebody, you can see the life turn around. You may kind of church once, kind of church twice, or church in me and say, I want to go to church again. So you want to go here? Right? You want to go to church? Right? So exposing them to a different environment may help change them. But then there's some that you just can't help, that you will try your best and is unwilling to bend and listen to God's advice. And some things is those persons you have to let them suffer the consequences.
Hard as you can hear, only you're going to feel sort of vibe.
Yeah, I hear you on that.
And that's a very, sorry to cut you, but that's a very realistic point. And even going back to school children as well, because like I said, at some age you will be emotionally, spiritually, and mentally immature. You'll be able to foresee the consequences of your decisions, right? And if you cannot see that and you are willing to listen to good advice, I tell you, I ask you, represent some already. And don't get me wrong, a mother's, sorry, not in the gender bias here, parents' love, financial, could be so strong that the child could be guilty. The devil could come to the earth and say he's guilty. And the mother, he said, not my child, not he, not my child, not he, don't tell me nothing. It wasn't he. So it's those situations where you got to let them feel the burning. Sometimes you got to let the parents feel the burning too, because parents are willing to bang.
And in those cases, it's the parents that are setting up the child even more than the child itself.
Mm-hmm.
Those parents are some of the most important. You know what I mean? And as you mentioned, I feel like, Scott, this is something that we have to touch on at some point, because as much as we talked about the criminal justice system, specifically we talked about the penal system in relation to the prison, sometimes the prison serves to make hardened criminals. I mean, like I know individuals who would go to prison one time and they come out, and for them that wasn't a consequence. And we know
yes,
now
they're a better criminal.
Yeah, so they become a pro
so
now.
How does the prison system does it contribute? You know where are things where that is? I feel like that would be a really good conversation to have, guys. I feel like the time just gone along so hard. So I Scott and I got given like a minute each or 30 seconds each to like share. And I want to ask you guys this pointed question. What do you think is necessary in Barbados at this time to stem the tide of criminal activity and gun violence in the country?
Look at Dr. St. Hill's face.
What well, I mean, Imran
want me write a thesis.
You know, two things. What do you think? What do you think is necessary?
Okay.
You
know? So we need to reform our education system. For sure. To me, that is a number one. Because our education system does not cater to different types of learning and different types of children.
Yeah.
And two, we need to deal with our substance abuse and use issues in a bigger way. We need more resources for that. So I can leave those as my two so that somebody else could call the rest.
Thank you so much.
All right, I can jump in quickly with my two. The first thing I will say is the certainty of being caught is a vastly more powerful deterrent than punishment. We need to deal with our penal system as well. You know, I don't want to go much further with that. Like we live in a society.
We need time to go further on that.
I think so too, but not right now. Not right now. You know, we live in a society where we have a whole set of music which talks about informers must die. You know, and that works against the very things that we want to see. My number two point, if I could just put it in one word, it would be God. Like, I feel as if a spiritual focus is so important for bringing about the morality that we used to boast about. I'll stop there.
Yeah.
Rashid.
Yes. Well, the way we look at the situation is that there are a series of events or a number of issues that would cause an individual or person to engage in crime, so to speak, right? So there has to be, if there's a number of push factors pushing young people into crime, there must be a comprehensive plan to tackle it. So I agree with the points made, but it can't just be one area here or probably church or just reform the system. Merely crime happen because I don't have. They're going to steal and rob because they don't have. I'm gonna sell weed because I ain't got no money, and right now this man driving a brand new Toyota and he only had weed for about a month. So what people can take, a person can take 3 years or 4 years plus interest to buy a car, I feel they can do it in 1 month. So you gotta provide, what we're trying to say is that you gotta provide opportunities comprehensively. I'm not just targeting one area because crime don't occur in one area. Remember, you're right there. But that means it's supposed to shut down. Come on, I'm supposed to stop speaking.
Time is tight, Rashid. Right. Tight.
I apologize. Just not a comprehensive system to address all the issues. Thank you very much. Have a good night. Thank you for having me. Bye bye.
You're most welcome. Imran. Followers to you, sir.
Next interview with Noah. It's time to wrap up with your music.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. Over to you, Scott.
Yo, man. Thanks to everybody. Thanks. It was a very interesting discussion. Thanks to those who messaged as well. Tune in next week, same time, 6:30, here on VOB 92.9 FM and Hot 95.3 FM for Fighting Crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence.